Hey everyone, producer John here. Before we get started, I just want to let you know that we did have some small technical difficulties when recording this podcast, specifically with Vinny's audio. So if you hear some of that, we're very, very sorry. But we did still want to put out this episode because it is a wonderful conversation between Vinny and Gary Washburn.
On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, Gary Washburn joins us to talk about his relationship with the Boston Celtics. He's covered the team for a long time. The evolution of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And also, we're going to talk about the longevity king, LeBron James. All that and much more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA writer, Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. Get us wherever you get your podcast. We are also on YouTube. If you are watching us on YouTube, you see a new face as a guest. He is a dear friend of mine. He is the national NBA reporter for the Boston Globe. He's also a writer for the Boston Celtics. His name is the great Gary Washburn. Los Angeles is on Gary Washburn. We're going to bounce around on a couple of news stories and then dig in deeper on the Celtics. For those who don't know, of course, I was in Los Angeles for Christmas Day. Me and Gary Washburn, of course, because Gary covers the Celtics, national writer, we had to have dinner together after after the Celtics and Lakers game on Christmas Day in LA. And gee, we had a great, like, it's one of those like random nights with Mark Spears and Max McGee from ESPN. One of those like random great nights. But before we begin, G, because LA is home for you, what is it like covering the Celtics as someone who grew up on the Showtime Lakers?
Yeah. Wow. Good question. Bizarre at the say the least, because you see how the other side lives. Like, you grow up hating the Celtics. You grow up just despising the Boston Garden. I still think in L.A. there's a hit, still a hit on ML Carr. I still think that, I don't know if he can still walk the streets safely, because he, that towel waving, you know, brother at the end of the bench, you know, woo, you know, and all that. Oh my God. So to see how the other side lives, to see it organized, how the organization is run, is truly bizarre. But I've seen and learned to appreciate both sides, and obviously covering the Celtics for almost 15 years now, 14 years, yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. Most of my friends and people I know grew up with are Laker fans, diehard Laker fans, so they don't even understand, comprehend how I, including you probably, although you're not a Laker fan, how I like Boston, deal with Boston, live in Boston every day, go to the arena, watch the green and white play, but I'm now used to it. It's a very wonderful organization. The people there have been really nice to me. I remember, you know, there was a, my uncle used to despise Tommy Heinsohn because obviously before your time, Vinny, a little bit before your time, CBS used to show the Lakers Celtics, obviously, right? When the CBS had the NBA in the 80s,
right?
And the announcers were Dick Stockton and our friend Tom Heinsohn, former Celtic player, former Celtic coach. And, you know, needless to say, he had some biases in this matchup. And so he made a lot of enemies in terms of his analysis of the game in L.A. So when I got to meet Mr. Heinsohn, and, you know, and he was around for a long time until he passed away a couple of years ago, he couldn't have been any nicer, any more polite, talked to him to do several stories. So all that, you know, I had to, you know, disappoint my uncle and say, hey, he's actually a good guy. He's actually not a jerk. He loves his Celtics, but couldn't have been nicer to me. So that changed the whole dynamic of covering this team and covering this franchise. And so to see how the other side lives is fascinating. And then now when I go to L.A., I feel like a stranger. You know, I go into Staples Center and you just see the glitz and the glamour and the celebrities. And I mean, you were there, Vinny. People just literally walking back and forth around the arena just to be seen. Like, not, you know, I mean, you, like, damn, bro, you ain't got to go to the bathroom that many damn times. Like, sit down, watch a game. You just get people literally to walk around the arena and walk in the, just to be seen. It's like, that's so L.A., and that's my hometown, but I'm not used to that. So when I go there, I still feel like a stranger.
You feel like a stranger everywhere. Now, for those who don't know, of course, Gary just told y'all he grew up right around. He didn't tell y'all, but he grew up around the corner from the Forum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Went to high school.
Oh, boy.
Who did you go to high school with, Gary? Because I feel like people need to know this to have some fun with you. So who did Gary Washburn go to high school with?
Regina King and Nia Long. And there's another gentleman, Tim Story, who directed the first Barbershop. But the headliner is Regina King and Nia Long. Yeah, that's the headliner at Westchester High School.
And Gary wasn't like using this pimp game. You weren't using like the game or anything like that. They weren't, because they weren't like celebrities. I think Regina had just started 227, right?
She was on 227 when she was at high school, and she was on the track team. Nia Long, I don't really remember. I mean, but she wasn't like, she might have been, you know, acting at that time, but she wasn't popular. We also had, there was a group called the Good Girls. They were kind of like a three-girl group in the late 80s. They had a song called Your Sweetness Is My Weakness. They were out of Westchester, too. Two of their members went to Westchester. So there was, I mean, it was a school that produced a lot of like celebrities, a lot of people that got into Hollywood and that type of thing, singers, rappers, athletes. So, yeah. Well, I was an absolute nobody at that time. But yeah, I did go to high school. If I give you my yearbook, Vinny, they are in the yearbook. People can't believe that. And Nia Long, that's her real name. That's her name in the yearbook. And the same with Regina King.
Yeah, I mean, for those who know, Gary is like a sweetheart of a person. He was not going to be trying to lay his game down quite flat in high school in that way. Whether they were celebrities or not, that is not how G was going to be getting down out there, okay?
I had no game. No game.
That's why you
were
married.
Yes.
That's why you are married and you are the wholesome person that you are now. And before we get into this stuff, there's one last thing. I'm not sure if you saw it. Aaron Gordon suffered dog bites, cuts, and lacerations on Christmas Day. There's no timeline for his return. Gary, have you ever heard of something so bizarre?
No, that's crazy. Like, what kind of dog we talking about? And, like, that dog, like, dog turned on. That dog went cucho on
him. A big one.
What's up? Like, what's up with that? Like, is he the owner? Like, is he the owner? Like, if that's his dog, why would that dog go? Did they euthanize the dog after that? Where's the dog now? What happened? What did he do? Was it something he was wearing? Was it a cologne? What set that dog off? And I mean, we've seen some bizarre injuries. I remember some baseball player back, like, hurt himself or strained his arm adjusting his seatbelt in his car back in the day, or adjusting his seat in the car. Like, we've seen some bizarre injuries, right? They don't really happen as much anymore. You know, people dropping something on their foot or you know, Marcus Smart after a tough loss, you know, punched a mirror and cut his hand. Like, we've seen that, but dog bites? Like, wow, man. I mean, and Aaron Gordon ain't no small dude. I mean, I don't know. Was he fighting a dog? Like, you know what he needed? He needed Mr. Jones. You catch a dog, choke a dog, and you need a dog catcher. he needed Mr. Jones. Choke a dog. You know, like, that's my pleasure.
You're talking about John Witherspoon.
He needed a dog catcher. Am I wrong? He needed Mr. Jones. We need to bring back Mr. Jones. Put him in the truck. You know,
look, that wasn't it. No, you know what I think it was, G. You know what I think it was. It sounds like it might have been a Christmas gift. Like, somebody might have bought him that as a Christmas gift. Happened on Christmas Day. Could have been a Christmas gift, and you know, just went bad. I don't mess with dogs. I'm not a dog person. I've dated women with dogs probably more, you know, I guess more recently, like over the past several years. And then, man, it is a task because they say dogs can smell when you don't like them and all that. So that makes them more aggressive. Baby, that is a task for your boy. I'm like, hey, why don't you just come over here today? Like, I'm usually not like, hey, I'll come see you. Because if Cujo was there, you know, sniffing at my feet and all that other type of stuff, like, no, I'm good there. So nothing. I know people love dogs. That ain't my thing. But G, of course, Gary being the Celtics beat writer, or one of the Celtics writers, the national NBA writer, the Celtics look like the best team in the NBA to this point. Or at least, at the very least, they got the top six. I'm not sure if they are looking to add more depth a little bit, you know, behind Al Horford, who has moved to the bench. But they have remade the roster. This is not quite the same team that, you know, went down 0-3 in the Eastern Conference Finals to the Miami Heat and then blew a game 7 at home after Jason Tatum injured his ankle, like, in the first couple of minutes. But the personnel moves that they've made, no Marcus Smart, no Grant Williams, no Robert Williams III, Horford moving to the bench. What was your reaction when those personnel moves happened? You know, grabbing Porzingis and then, you know, later, right before training camp, getting Jrue Holiday. Did you think that the Celtics would adjust as well as they have?
Yeah, Vinny, I was, everybody, like, I was wait and see. I think everybody was kind of just wait and see how this went down. Porzingis is a player who we all know is great skills, a wonderful skill set, kind of what they call him, a unicorn, 7'3", can shoot from the three, can post up a little bit. But obviously health has always been a factor with him. He came off a season where he played 65 games in Washington, which is a lot for him. And I think he missed the last six games with, like, an illness. I think the Wizards kind of were tanking and shut him down to get a better draft pick. So he probably could have played 70 games, which would have been really, really high for him. So he's coming off a really his best statistical year, but you're like, well, how is this going to work with him? Is he going to be injured? Then I think he had like a plantar fasciitis, and he didn't play for Latvia in the World Cup. So you're like, oh, here we go. This is the Porzingis that we know. He's already entering camp hurt, but he has been remarkably healthy. So I don't think people really understood, and we were waiting to see on him. Trading Smart, I thought, was something that probably, in all honesty, Vinny, had to be done. I think his influence over the organization, I think the organization felt like they had to give Jalen and Jason a chance to lead. And Marcus's impact and imprint on an organization mm-hmm. was just so large. And it becomes so large. And it was nothing that he's done wrong, but he's an impactful dude. He's an A personality. If Tatum and Brown won't take the last shot, he sure as hell will. You know, there's some plays he made. And I think, in all honesty, with Marcus, some of the great things he did was being evened out by some of the boneheaded plays, some of the, you know, bad three-pointers. There was a play in the Atlanta series where they game 5, they had a chance to close the Hawks out. He tries to lunge at Trae Young to get a steal in the last minute two of the game, fouls Young in the bonus, you know, Young hits a couple of free throws, like things like that. Like, Marcus, just play straight up defense, trust your defense, and you know, eke out this win. Instead, he tried to play the hero ball thing. And I think those things begin to even out with the great things that he had done. And so I think that, but there was a split kind of in Boston about, well, do they need him or do they not need him? Is it addition by subtraction, or are they going to miss this guy? And then, but that was all leveled off, Vinny, when they got Jrue Holiday. If you would have told Celtic fans, you're going to get Jrue Holiday, don't trip, there would have been very different reaction to the Smart trade. But when they got Jrue Holiday, and they, you know, the Robert Williams thing, I think people like Robert, good, very good kid, but as you saw now see in Portland, he just can't stay healthy. Like, he just was never durable. He was never reliable. And I think Celtic fans said, if they're going to compete for a championship, you got to have a reliable dude in the middle. You can't have a dude that you're hoping he might be healthy for the playoffs, or you got to baby him and give him the Kawhi treatment to hope that he's healthy for the playoffs. So I think I was unsure how it was going to work until they got Holiday. But the addition of Holiday, Porzingis has been wonderful, and he's been mostly durable. He's had some aches, and they're being real cautious with him, which is understandable. And then the ascension of Derek White has changed this team from last year. White came over from San Antonio in 22. He wasn't confident. And I always say this, like, most of the players we cover, Vinny, have that supreme confidence, right? They're like, they're dogs. Like, that's how they got to the league. They are like, you know, they feel confident that they can beat anybody. You ask, you know, most of these guys, are they the best player in the league? Privately, yes. So I'm just saying, like, some of these guys grow up with that confidence. Derek is not that guy. Derek's confidence, he needs to have encouragement. He needs to be one of those players that people say, we believe in you, Derek. So when he got to Boston in the middle of the season in 22 and was like, okay, Derek, start shooting threes. Huh? What? Like, he's played for Pop, right? Everything's been so structured. So he comes to a system that's like, no, Derek, you're free. And it took him a long time to react to that favorably. So now he's had two children in Boston. He's a father of two. He's settled here. The confidence is there, the faith from the organization. And now he's just a brand new player. You know, this is the Derek White they thought they were acquiring 2 years ago. If this Derek White was in the finals, they beat Golden State, like I believe. But he was unsure of himself. Wow. But now that's no longer the case, right? Because if you look at the finals, he had a really good game one. When they stole game one at Golden State, and everybody's like, oh, the Celtics about to win this in five.
Yep.
But he disappeared. He did not show up. He was on the milk carton for the rest of the last five games of that series. So now that guy doesn't exist anymore. This Derek White playing an all-star level. Drew's not having to do as much. Porzingis also protecting the rim. It's made this a different team than it was last year. It was Smart because they didn't have a reliable shooter. Like Smart, you love him. Smart is an erratic three-point shooter and doesn't shoot from the mid-range. So Holiday is crafty. Derek White can attack the rim, hit the short floater. So they're so more versatile than they were last year.
Yeah, they're just much more dynamic. Like, we're going to get into it because Gary thinks like I think. They take too many threes, and Gary has this Tom and Jerry relationship with Joe Mazzulla, the Celtics coach. But I put a mental note in with you talking about Marcus Smart and leadership. Jason Tatum doesn't come off like leader guy. He comes off like lead by example. He comes off like, I'm going to show up, go to work. This is what I do. Not necessarily, hey, guys, come along with me. And when I talked to Drew Holiday after the game the other day, he said, you know, we have great leadership here already. I don't have to step in and do the most. I don't have to step in and overexert myself. So with Marcus Smart gone and Jason Tatum and Jalen Brown, leading that charge, did you see Jason Tatum turning into a leader, or is he just sort of growing into his own skin that way?
Yeah, Vinny, I think he's growing to his own skin. And I think he's one of them dudes, he's more of a private leader. Like, he'll say something in the locker room. He'll say something one-on-one. He's not one of those guys that you're going to mic up during a game and he's just going to be talking. Jason is very comfortable in his own skin. And he basically said, hey, man, I'm not Kevin Garnett. Like, I love KG, love the guy. I've seen all the video. I've seen all the expletives that he says and how he gets people going. That's not me. Jason is not going to try to be someone he's not, grow out of his own skin. He's very comfortable being just kind of like listen, I'm going to lead by example. I'm going to be the hardest worker at practice. I'm going to work my butt off before the game in my pregame regimen. I'm going to do everything I'm supposed to do. And I'm going to say some things if I need to say them. Jaylen Brown has become also more vocal. I think it was about time that they had to do that. You know, Jason's 7 years in, Jaylen's 8 years in. Like, it's time for them to be the leaders of this franchise. You, the best players, in many cases, need to be your leaders. And they don't have to be the more vocal leaders, because Al Horford will say something. You know, I think there's other guys who will right. just lend a word here. But I don't think they have this unquestioned, like, you know, I think the perfect example would be KG, right? That's the guy you like. That's the model leader, the dude who's pulling everybody together and cursing you out when you need it and also motivating you when you need it. Jason is more just like, I'm going to play. You're going to look at me by example. I'm going to say something if I need to say it. I'm going to say something in the huddle. I'm going to communicate to you, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to make headlines with it. I'm not going to front you. I'm not going to embarrass you in front of people. I'm not going to, he doesn't trash talk much. Now, he'll do his little actions. He'll kiss after the three. But Jason's not a much of a talker on the floor or like going back and forth. I've really never seen him go back and forth with like any opponent in terms of like, you know, occasionally you see dudes just go at each other. He'll go at you with his game. He might not go at right. you with his words. So I think that they're kind of a leadership by committee at this point. And I think Jaylen has some words to say. Mazzulla obviously will inject his opinions. If I'm the Celtics, they have to be comfortable with that. Where Marcus was kind of the guy. He was the heart and soul. And he, whenever he comes back in a couple of weeks with Memphis, he's going to get the video, the standing ovation. There's going to be a lot of people, you know, wishing he was still around, but I think that they've learned how to move on without him and have sort of a leadership by committee where Jason is not trying to be something he's not. And that's what they don't, you don't want Jason to be what he's not. You want Jason to be what he is.
No, that's a great point. I mean, this is also a veteran team that probably doesn't need somebody in their face all the time doing the fire and brimstone act. And it's funny, Gary, because the Celtics have been mainstays in the Eastern Conference for so long. They made one final, I think maybe five Eastern Conference finals or maybe some. I feel like maybe that's the number. I feel like it's five.
Five.
But I feel like it's been different iterations of those teams. The biggest change has been on the sidelines with Joe Mazzulla. Last year, I didn't feel like Mazzulla was comfortable in his own skin being thrust into that leadership press conferences. Now, Gary, you seem to have this very light, halfway serious back and forth with Joe about the Celtics and the three-point attempts. You seem to think the Celtics take way too many threes and they don't have a diverse enough offensive game. Joe Mazzulla seems to think, let it fly. Do you think, A, can you explain the dynamic between you and Joe for those who don't know, and B, do you think that is something that could hinder them when it's playoff basketball?
Yeah, Vinny. Joe and I are good. Like, you know, if you look on the outside, people have, you know, our friends on X or Twitter, you know, he hates you. Joe does not hate me. I do not hate Joe. I do not dislike Joe. I think Joe's a great coach. I think he's a good personality. I think he's very passionate about his philosophies. And he's very stubborn, which I think kind of hindered the team last year, where he was very inflexible about, calling timeouts when a team makes a 15-0 run. Like, Joe, stop the game, insert new players, change the momentum. Like, you see the other 29 coaches do it, Joe. Stop trying to reinvent the wheel. Call a damn timeout. If the Lakers go on a 20-0 run and LeBron had got four dunks, like, stop the fight, and then change your lineups, give your guys a chance to get some Gatorade, and change the philosophy, change your defense. He had to learn that. This year, we go back and forth because I challenge him, and, you know, I don't cover this team, Vinny, like they're Charlotte or Atlanta. I cover them like they're a team that hasn't won a title in 15 years, that they're after a title. They're the 17-time world champions. They you know, and they're a championship caliber team. I don't cover them like I expect them to lose in the first round and that's good. Oh, very good, Boston. You lost in the second round. Like, you made the playoffs. No, this team is trying to chase the ultimate championship, and you need to play like a championship team. And if they don't, I'm going to call them out on it. If they do, I will praise them. I am not a fan. I think, Vinny, in our business now, fandom has become kind of rampant, and you got beat writers and people who cover the team literally rooting for their team and slapping hands with them and admiring cats on their shoes and their drip and all that and wanting to be friends with these guys. And we know you've had your issues over the years, and I've had my issues, that you can't cover the team like that accurately. You've got to be fair, and you have to be tough, especially when you're covering a team. I'm not covering the Pistons. Ouch. I'm not covering a team that's just literally trying to win a game. I'm covering a team that's trying to win a chip. So, no, I'm just saying, you know.
Oh, no, they deserve it. Gary, when you lose 27 straight games, you deserve the knock, okay? Don't apologize. Stand on it.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel bad for Detroit. So my whole thing with Joe is, it's not that, well, don't take any threes, Joe. No, this is a 3-point league. But when you're taking 50, they took 58 in their loss to the Warriors. 58. And they missed 41. They lost the game by 6. Okay. Like, that's, to me, that's too damn many. If you take, Joe wants to take as many as they can. I feel like you should attack the rim, get to the free throw line, and also get yourself easy buckets. When you're trying to, don't settle for threes. Don't, you know, not everybody is meant to take a three. Not everybody, you know, early in the shot clock, off a fast break. Things that are just like, guys, work the ball in. You have two of the best 2-point shooters in the league. Jalen has perfected that floater, that mid-range, that high arcing. And Jason, when he came into the league, he was trying to be Kobe. Right. And he wasn't Kobe, right? He was trying to take that little, you know, step back, you know, where basically you shoot it damn near parallel. He's mastered that shot now. Like, that's his shot. First couple years, it was like, no, he suffered from Kobe-itis. Now, he has mastered that shot. So you have two, and then you have Derek White, who's good in the floater game, and Drew Holiday. So why are you constantly settling for threes if there's not a flow in the offense? Just take threes in the flow of the offense. That's my – so Joe and I go at it because he feels like a three is better than a two. He takes an analytical approach, and we have gone at it over that. And but I think, honestly, three-point shooting for this franchise has been an issue for 6 to 7 years. If you look at some of the Eastern Conference Finals, one game when they hosted LeBron in 2018, and everybody thought they were going to close him out. They lost game 6 and 7. They went, I think, 7 for 36 from three in that game, lost 87-79. They scored 79 points in that game. And everybody, you know, Cleveland kind of, I don't think, you know, I think the only team that thought they were going to close that out was Cleveland. Like, everybody else thought the Celtics were going to the finals in 18. They didn't, right? Because of three-point shooting. It's been an issue for years. And if I cover the Warriors, if I'm covering dudes who can 3 to 4 elite shooters, then I ain't got nothing to say. The Warriors have done this by shooting threes. But Brown and Tatum are good three-point shooters, but not elite. So why are you doing something you're not elite at constantly? You know, like, there's certain things we're not good at that we like to do, but we can't do them often and expect to flourish. It's just something you got to chill at. Like, I can only do this every now and then because I'm not real good at it. So I think if you're good at making twos and getting to the free throw line and you're pretty good at threes, I don't think you should dominate the threes. So to me, that's something that Joe and I have gone back and forth. We have a healthy respect for each other. But he will go at me in the press conference, and I'll go at him. We talk afterwards. We'll text. So we're good. I don't have any disdain for Joe Mazzulla. I'll just set the record straight. People, friends ask me, My wife asked me, like, what's wrong? Like, I'm fine with Joe. We're good. I have a lot of respect for Joe Mazzulla. I think he's a good coach. But if I have an issue personally, having watched, you, just like you, 1,000-plus right. basketball games over right. the years, more than that, 2,000, and you see a team chucking threes when they don't need to, and then people, well, that's how you win a title. If I'm not mistaken, Vinny, Denver did not shoot the three ball well against Miami.
No, they didn't.
They did not. I can look that up, but Denver was not killing at the 3-point line in that series. They beat Miami with the two. So it's possible to win a championship by measuring your 3-point shots, taking quality 3-point shots, letting your shooters shoot, but also getting to the line, getting easy buckets.
I think it's a fine line because they take a lot of threes. They don't look rushed. It looked like this was what they're trying to do. Like watching them in person, I was like, oh, they're running to the corners. They're running to the 3-point line. Okay, I get it now. And it can be like an Achilles heel. It can be something that winds up biting them in the butt a little bit later. When you play Miami or you play Milwaukee or you play Philadelphia, you know, decides that they want to be a real big dog in the Eastern Conference, right? Last thing before we go and talk about LeBron. The Tatum and Brown pairing has been together for a long time. And a lot of people have had their doubts about those two, whether it's the personality fit, the on-court pairing as far as style. But it seems like Tatum has been like, you know, I'm going to say thrust. Tatum's game has been put in a place where you are confident that Tatum can be the best player on the championship team. And Jaylen Brown won't get in the way of that. Jaylen Brown got the Supermax deal over the summer. He's rewarded. You don't hear as much of the trade stuff. You don't hear as much of sort of the controversial stuff. There's that left-hand problem, right? You know, there's the dribbling thing. But just as far as the evolution of their relationship, Gary, it doesn't feel as competitive as it used to feel, right?
Right, but I don't think it was ever – I think they both had to feel each other out over a period. I'll just set the record straight. What I see, they've never had beef. They've never had an issue. They've never – they're different cats. And I think that what we do, Vinny, you know, and you're obviously younger than me, but you're now, you know, older than a lot of guys you cover. You know, I've been in a position for a long time now. We assume that these guys who come out, the Generation Zers, the kids that are born in the 90s are all the same. And they're not. They all listen to Drake. They all like their sneakers. They all like they're all the same. They're not all the same. Jason is a father of a 6-year-old son. He had a son right this rookie year. He is a family guy. Jalen is seeing the world. Jalen's going to Egypt, Saudi Arabia. He's speaking at Harvard. They're different dudes. Okay. But they have a healthy respect for each other and they hang out occasionally. They work out together, but they're not the best of friends. It's not because they don't like each other. It's because they're just different cats. Jason spends a lot of time with his son and his family. Jalen is like, I think I'm about to go to Australia right now. I want to see some sights. I want to explore something. I want to explore my religion. I want to look into this. Like, Jalen's, they're just different dudes. And I think that there's been this confusion that teammates all need to be best friends off the floor.
Right.
And if they're not, then they're beefing. Not true. Not true at all. They have a healthy respect for each other. They like each other. And they know how important each other is to their success. Jason ain't winning a title without Jalen. And Jalen ain't winning a title without Jason. And that's the whole thing. So I think now they've gained a chemistry and with the teamwork and with the teammates, Vinny, they stopped doing the whole, okay, it's your turn now. Okay, now it's my turn. You know, there will still be times you saw it in the Laker game. Jason's like, I'll go to my cohort Adam Hill's spot, this shot going up. Jason ain't shot in 8 possessions. Jason's shooting on the knife, right? In the same time. Sometimes, but that's stars. That's what stars do. It's my turn to take this shot. Unless I'm triple teamed, quadruple teamed, this shot is going up, or I'm getting to the line. So they still have that, but they still get along well. They've learned how to play together. They have a healthy respect for each other, and they know how important each other is. So I don't think that there was ever any like beef or any issues with the two personally. I do think they had to figure out how to play together. And then the coach, whether it be Brad Stevens or Ime Udoka, now Joe Mazzulla, had to come up with a system to accentuate. Like, okay, you play Jason, you take Jason out at the six-minute mark, you let Jalen eat for the last, you know, half of the first quarter, then you take Jalen right. out and you let Jason start the second. Like, times where they're on the floor together and not on the floor together. So I think that that took some time. And also, they both have expanded their games. Jason has become a better mid-range shooter, gotten to the free throw line more. Jalen has worked on his game, although, as you said, Vinny, he still needs to work on his handle. He's made better decisions this year with, like, open court and not trying to, like, dribble. And I'm going to use an old reference. Like, you, bro, you ain't Marcus Haynes. You ain't Rod Strickland. You ain't, you know, Isaiah Thomas, the old one, number 11. You can't dribble through four guys and get to the rack. Like, that's not you. Hold the ball up. Wait till your teammates pass it and then get it back and then be more comfortable. Like, I think he's done better at that this year. There's still some times, and the league knows all right. we got to do is rip him on his left, or we just, you know, try to, you know, make a jab at him. He might lose his handle. I mean, obviously the scouting report, that's what it says. So to me, I think that the both of them have done well, not only coexisting, but flourishing. But the last step, Vinny, is a championship. If this don't work, then it'll be considered a failure. But you want them to pair up, and their goal is like they understand. We want to be like Pierce and Garnett and Allen. We want to be like Bird, Parrish, and McHale, JoJo White and Dave Collins, Russell and Cousy. They see the numbers on the rafters. They see those old guys come back and get standing O's. They're like, we want to do that. Well, you got to win a championship. And I'm not saying Tatum's not going to get his number retired, or Brown if they don't win a championship, but it certainly would help for them to get a chip during this era and during this time, and especially during this season when, Benny, we talked to the league, there's not a dominant team this year. There just isn't. If the Celtics are, then you know they could be that dominant team, and I think they have been. But if Minnesota is their competition, I think the Celtics like their chances.
That's where I was going to go next, before we close this out or close up the segment, Gary. I think they need one more big. I've said that at the top of the show. Another big just to have at the rim protection to protect against, you know, Porzingis getting hurt, Horford getting hurt. I don't know how much you want to depend on, you know, old buddy, I can't think of his name for anything right now, but when the Lakers saw him, it was a freeway to the basket, right? You know what I mean? Like I'm very curious. What do you think, if the Celtics don't make the NBA Finals this year, what will be the reason? Will it be the three-point shooting? Will it be the lack of depth? Will it be the Miami Heat boogeyman getting them again? What is your biggest concern?
Yeah, my biggest concern is them falling in love with the three in a couple of those games and then, you know, not being able to close out. But this team doesn't have the characteristics of last year's team as much. Like, honestly, that Laker game on Christmas, they might have lost that game last year because they would have let the Lakers come back. You know, they held, you know, they let the Lakers come back early. They went up 12-0. Right. The Lakers rallied to take like a one-point lead early third quarter. Then the Celtics started to settle down. LeBron was a little tired. He wasn't himself after scoring 40 two nights before against Oklahoma. They let AD get his, but nobody else really stepped up. Yeah, that's 38 on 39 talking. So if they would have given up that lead, and then it would have been, you know, nip and tuck all the way down, but they took care of business. If they do that, take care of business, don't blow leads mentally, don't lose focus on the process in the game, I don't think there's anything to stop from getting to the finals. But like you said, Vinny, it could be that Miami bugaboo. And believe me, the Heat are preparing for the Celtics. And the Celtics know the Heat are coming. Like, they are likely to meet in the playoffs. I don't know why. I'd say they're going to meet in the playoffs somehow, because the Heat, they're playing not healthy. And one thing that the Celtics know is that the Heat, they rest guys. You know, they've been the more injured team in the league because they want to give guys like Jaime Jaquez, Jamal Kane, Haywood Highsmith, and others a chance to really get quality time. So in the playoffs, they can do what Caleb Martin and Gabe Vincent did to them last year and gash them in the playoffs, where no one had any idea Caleb Martin was going to turn into Kobe in that damn series against it. Like, no one had any idea that all of a sudden that dude couldn't miss. That was from him playing quality regular season minutes when guys are out. So the Celtics know Miami's coming. So don't think that they look down on Miami or think, because Miami's not have a great record right now. Miami will be there in the end. So I think, yeah, it could be the three-point shooting. It could be injuries, or it could be just losing focus. But I don't think this team can blow leads. Any team blows leads. Obviously, 17-point leads in the league are nothing anymore. But the Celtics have a focus this year that I personally haven't seen in the last couple of years. So I do think the three-point shooting could hurt them if they just decide, you know what, we're just going to chuck them. And in some games early in the season, they did that. That Golden State game, they took 58. That was one short of the team record. They missed 41. That was a team record. Like, you missed 41 three-pointers in a game. Like, that is a lot. When you're flourishing at, when Golden State's only rim protector was Trayce Jackson-Davis. Like, that's something that you gotta think about sometimes. Look at the other team and go, no, we need to attack them. The Lakers, you know, the Celtics attacked the rim because they shot 30% from three in that game and still won by 11. So you can win, believe it or not. Don't, you know, I'm not crazy. People think I am and not. But you can win without making 43s in a game.
And that is why it's Gary possible. And Joe Mazzulla find themselves in the Wiley Coyote Roadrunner Act after every Celtics game. But you brought up LeBron, and of course, we all saw LeBron on Christmas Day. Wasn't his best game. It was probably his worst game of the season, Gary. Don't have to get into the greatest of all time argument. I've said it all the time. It's reductive, I think. We don't have to do that. We can talk about him in a number of ways where it doesn't have to be about LeBron versus Michael, where LeBron fits in the history books and all that stuff. All that stuff will sort of shake itself out. But Gary, he'll be 39, I believe, on Friday, or maybe Saturday. I think it's December 30th. I just turned 39. I feel every bit of it every day. It hurts, okay? 39 hurts. Can't imagine what 40 feels like, right? But where LeBron is, I guess, undisputably impressive is the longevity and the usual energy that he has night to night. Like, he's second in minutes played all time behind Kareem. He'll probably pass him next season. He's ninth in games played. Of course, all-time scoring leader. Are you marveling? Are you still able to marvel because you've seen him in high-leverage playoff situations against the Boston Celtics? Are you still surprised? And he can rev up the energy night to night to night in year 21 or whatever the hell it is.
Oh, totally. I mean, you know, you could argue. I've always said this. I always thought Jordan was the greatest player of all time. LeBron has made it an argument. And I think that's the biggest compliment you can pay LeBron. LeBron has made this an argument. He has made this a debate. Now, I still think Jordan is the greatest, but LeBron, with his longevity, there is no athlete who has done this in the NBA level ever at 38. Kareem at 38 was, you know, picked his moments. That was Kareem at 38 was 1985, where he was kind of considered an old man, but he came back and had a good couple of games in the NBA Finals against the Celtics. And then in the last 4 years of his career, he kind of steadily declined, you know, where he was, I remember a sad moment where he had this consecutive double-digit streak going of points, and that got broken. He had scored like 8 points in a game. And, you know, as a kid growing up in L.A., and you see your hero, and Kareem was my favorite Laker, and him scoring 8 points with 7 rebounds in a game, and you're like, yeah, it's coming to an end. With LeBron, you don't obviously see that. Like, he's playing at a high level, and it's kind of sad that he's still the best player in the team. I think everyone assumed that he was going to hand the mantle to Anthony Davis. It was going to be AD's team. LeBron's going to be that number two guy, but that ain't worked out that way. LeBron ain't no number two note to nobody at this point. So I do marvel at his athleticism. And then mixing Vinny, with the basketball IQ, with just how smart he is, how he reads his scouting reports, he knows everybody in the league. This is not a guy who doesn't respect his opponent. This is a guy who probably could read the ninth man on, you know, the Charlotte Hornets and tell you all about his game. You know, he could take someone, you know, Miles Bridges, or that's a bad example, Jayshon Tate from the Rockets, and tell you what he needs to do to stop Jayshon Tate. Like, guys that we don't see, we're not familiar with. Like, so to me, you have to admire that. Like, that is, I marvel at that. And yeah, like, we saw, like, what happened in Oklahoma. That was a big deal to me. You know, they had lost 4 in a row. They had looked really ragged since the in-season tournament. And LeBron says it's a must win. And he drops 40 on the Thunder. And the Thunder have been very good at home, and they didn't stand a chance that game. But then you see all the energy exerted against Oklahoma City, the Lakers, and then he had that injury. His knee bumped into Jaylen Brown's back. That was the weirdest injury I think I've seen on the basketball court, besides Aaron Gordon's getting bit by a dog. But he just wasn't himself, right? Like, he couldn't finish. You saw 38 that day. And I don't know if that was just the injury or whether I was like, hey, man, I ain't got it every night like I used to. I used to be able to bring this 80 nights a year. Now I can bring it 53. There's going to be nights I don't have it. But that's few and far between as far as I've seen. I mean, just his overall high level, maybe we've seen this out of like Tom Brady in the NFL, a 38-year-old who's just dominating the game in other sports, but not in basketball. No, we've never seen this, Vinny.
That you can say about LeBron at this point is, on a given night, right, on a given evening, he can be the best player on the floor. He can rev it up and be as good as Steph, or as good as Jokic, as good as Embiid. He can be as good and as impactful as anybody on one given night. Can you count on him to do that? One playoff series, maybe. But 4, that's a little tough for me. And I think we can marvel at the longevity and marvel at the sustained excellence that at year 21, that he still has some energy left, and not that he is on a steady decline. Like, some of the advanced stats aren't necessarily kind, but on a given night, I think LeBron can be as good and as impactful as anybody. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Gary Washburn. That's all we've got for you today on The Good Word. Gary, don't forget to check out his great work at the Boston Globe. Do yourself a favor, pick up a copy of The Spencer Haywood Rule, which Gary wrote with a friend of the podcast, Mark Spears, who we also spent Christmas night with in Pasadena. Had a great meal and met some great people in LA. Anything else? Anything else you're working on, G?
Just covering this season. Got some a Celtic book that will be released, a photo collage of their history, released at the end next summer. So look out for that. I'll put some stuff on my social media for that. But as for now, just covering a team that like you said, me and Missoula will continue our back and forth and our friendship, because we are friends throughout the season. It'll be fascinating to see how this team does this season. And including tonight against Vinny's hometown team, the Detroit Pistons come to Boston. We'll see how that goes. 23-6 against 2-28. Yikes.
Yeah, there's not much I have to say about that team right now, other than it is bad and they better get a win. But it ain't going to happen on Thursday. That is Gary Washburn. ladies and gentlemen, be on the lookout for everything he's got going. Thanks to producer John and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes. We are taking Monday off to celebrate the new year, but I will be back with a new episode of The Good Word on Tuesday. Thank you to everyone for your listens, your likes, your views, and of course, with the new year coming up, everybody, please be safe. Hopefully, we will see and hear from all of you guys in 2024. Until then, everybody be safe.